Luke. Luke.
Ben?
You will listen to the Wampa's Lair podcast.
Podcast?
There you will hear your hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, as they discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out. Oh, and watch out for Wampas.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 196, Return of the Jedi, Act 1. I'm, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the Bib Fortuna to my salacious crumb, we have Carl LeClaire.
My Leku are getting long. I need a Leku trim. Yeah, I'm glad you didn't make me him, because I hate Salacious Crumb. I like Jar Jar more than Salacious Crumb, like immensely more.
That's funny.
Jason, I'm glad that we're getting this in, because we've done one act, like an act episode each month, and it's the dead last day of the month for August. So yeah. I'm glad we're getting this in. I also had my car inspection was due by the end of today, too, so I quickly got that done this morning.
There you go.
So I like to wait to the last minute on some things. So, But Act 1 of Return of the Jedi is probably one of the most action-packed Act 1s we have.
Yeah.
Except for maybe Phantom Menace.
Or Empire.
Yeah. Or I guess even an Attack of the Clones. Ah, screw it. But yeah, anyway, it's a good one, and I'm looking forward to talking about it.
Yes.
It's fresh in my head, so I'm ready to go about it. And normally,
Return of the Jedi is always fresh in my head.
Normally, we would go over a matchup or a poll, but Jazz gave us a matchup at the end of our last episode that we just didn't get around to posting on social media. So that'll be for our next episode for sure, which is our matchup of Guri from Shadows of the Empire versus Bones, which is Snap Wexley's droid in the Aftermath novels. So if you don't know either of those stories, you're probably like, well, I can't participate in this. And if that's the case, apologies, but also encouragement to read those books because they're really good. So,
yes. Or encouragement to catch up on them on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
So you can make your decision.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which is what I'm going to have to do just to refresh myself.
Yeah, this is going to be a tough one for me. But but anyway, let's just jump right into Return of the Jedi.
I don't even
want to delay. Why delay? No.
Why delay? You know,
Jason, this is
Star Wars movie ever.
This is I when I was reading the opening crawl. A lot of times when I actually watch the Star Wars movies, oftentimes I actually skip the opening crawl. Not because I don't like them, but just because it's just like I know what's in there so well, right? It's like my DNA. Like, I know what's in there.
Right.
I don't think I can recite them. Like, I know there's some fans that can recite them word for word. I can't do it, but I know what they still say. Like, it's never a surprise, obviously. Probably to most of us who are listening, it's never a surprise. But that being said, I feel like Return of the Jedi has some really cool things in the opening crawl that I wanted to mention.
Okay.
And the very first thing is... And just like in Force Awakens, the first word is Luke, which I think is cool. And it mentions something very interesting about Luke that I noticed. First off, he is going back to Tatooine, which is really cool if you think about it. Because if you think back to A New Hope, when Luke sells his land speeder and he says, I'm never coming back to this place, right? Like, Luke kind of swore off a Tatooine, right? When he leaves in A New Hope. It's almost like he's rejecting his, not rejecting his life, but he's kind of just like, this chapter's over. I'm ready to, you know, begin a new chapter, begin a new story for myself. So he kind of walks away from that because Tatooine is not the most exciting time of his life. So I think it's really telling that he's come back and he's come back for a friend. So even though Luke has kind of sworn that part of his life off, he's willing to go back for his friend. I think that's really telling about who he is. And Luke's not alone, because obviously the rest of our heroes are coming with Luke to come back to Tatooine. And if you listen to our last episode where we kind of compared Legends with the new EU, one of the issues I took with one of the Aftermath books is Han and Chewie go missing and Leia sends a team to find them. She doesn't do it herself and Luke's nowhere to be found. So again, right. I just find that very unsettling considering what we see right here at the start of this film. In this opening crawl, we hear how kind of this family is returning to get one of their missing family members.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, and Luke's always that good guy. You know, he's essentially especially in the classic trilogy, and we're not entirely certain where he's going in the sequel trilogy. Luke is sort of the Clark Kent, if you will, of the Star Wars universe, in that he is, you know, very pure and good in his intentions. And of course, you know, in this sort of situation, he would go find his friend. He'd go back for his friend. You know, it's more a question of when and how rather than if.
Yeah.
For Luke, you know, it's not a question of if, it's, you know, how do we do this?
Right.
What's the best way to do this? So, yeah. Yeah. If it means going back to his home world to face down the most vile gangster, Jabba the Hutt, that rules Tatooine, basically, so be it.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's a good point you just made, Jason, about how it's not so much, you know, if, but when and how. Mm-hmm. Which, again, that right there shows the growth. You know, we're going to see a lot of that early in this film, that Luke has grown quite a bit since Empire Strikes Back. But that in and of itself shows how much he's grown, because this isn't like the next day, right?
No.
I think the canon is like 6 months to a year between Empire and Jedi. I don't know what's the set in stone date.
Yeah, I'm not sure. From what I understand, it's either almost a year or just about a year, you know, somewhere around that year mark-ish.
Right.
But I'm not entirely certain. So,
but all that, you know, what's important about that is Luke's response to the danger of his friends, right? In Empire, he drops his training and just goes, and he's unsuccessful. Now Luke realizes, okay, this is probably going to take some planning. We're going to have to infiltrate, you know, one of the most powerful gangsters in the galaxy's palace. Let's mm-hmm. think this through. And I think, again, that in and of itself shows that Luke has grown.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Definitely. And of course, as you said, we'll see a lot of his growth and the immense strides that he's made in his growth here early in the film, particularly Act One. In addition to being, you know, the rescue of Han Solo, is also George Lucas and the filmmakers showing us how much Luke has grown, so that when he is challenged at the end of the movie, you know, we understand how difficult that is. So,
yeah.
And then, of course, it mentions something about the second Death Star being built and all that fun stuff. And,
you right. know, yeah. That's basically Starkiller Base Jr. Mm.
Death Star 2.0.
Yeah. So, obviously, the very first opening shots besides the crawl is, again, a Star Destroyer. Kind of a similar shot to A New Hope. It's a Star Destroyer coming over the top of us. I love that shot. I really love the shot in Return of the Jedi. I love it because you've got another Death Star looming ahead. So there's no like, where is it? What does it look like? It's right there, right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And the Star Destroyer is approaching, and everyone is a little on edge, it seems.
Yeah.
Like. And it's really cool because the reason they're on edge is because Vader's on the ship. Vader's coming. And if we remember Vader's performance in Empire, he is not the kindest guy to work for.
No, that is for certain. Yeah, the tension is high.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's a little, you know, walking on eggshells, so to speak, because they're not entirely certain why he's here. They have a good idea, but they're not entirely certain. And of course, this Death Star has obviously been under construction for quite some time, and as we'll find out, they're behind schedule, mm-hmm. and that's why Vader's here.
One thing
he's
wanted
here to find new ways to motivate them.
One thing I really like that I noticed when we get the inside shot of the hangar right after the shuttle lands, mm-hmm. you know, you see up in the kind of the top foreground, you see on the left side a TIE bomber kind of anchored, which is cool because, again, connection to something we saw in Empire. But also on the right side, there appears to be like a laser turret. suspended from the ceiling. And to me, it looks a lot like the one that we see in The Phantom Menace aboard the droid control ship that destroys the ship that Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan were on. Remember that turret that drops down and shoots the ship? That mm-hmm. turret looks very similar to the turret inside the hangar in Return of the Jedi, which I just think is really cool. I don't know if that's on purpose or not, but they're not exactly the same, nor should they be. This is, you know, like 30, 40 years later, but it's a very similar design, and I just think that's really cool.
Yeah. Internal hangar defense yeah. in case something goes wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're right. You know, so Vader shows up. It's, again, kind of what we can suspect from off screen is the Emperor has sent him to prepare the way. You know, Vader's the John the Baptist for the Emperor's for the Emperor's Jesus. So Vader's there to kind of make sure stuff's ready to go because the Emperor's coming. So, again, it's kind of cool that the Emperor doesn't show up right away. He sends his emissary first. Get things in order for me. I mean, Jared's already like shaking in his boots because Vader's here, and then
right.
the Emperor's coming here. Like now he's wetting That's himself a little.
Correct, Commander. And he is most displeased with your apparent lack of progress.
We shall double our efforts.
Yeah,
I hope so, Commander, for your sake. The Emperor is not as forgiving as I am.
And that line, in and of itself, is just kind of terrifying.
Yeah. Because
Vader's not a forgiving man in general.
Yeah. P.S. You do a better Vader than the guy, I think his name's Brock Peters, the one who does it in the radio drama. Like, you get used to it, but man, it's not good. Anyway, sorry. But yeah, you're right. You know, that line is terrifying. Yeah. Not as forgiving as you?
The classic trilogy, that sets a... an uneasy precedent for what's about to come. But if you've seen the prequels, you go, that's quite accurate. And you're reminded of why you should be scared of the Emperor.
Right. Right. Now we moved on to Tatooine. Mm-hmm. Tatooine, whatever. I want to bring up a question for you quick. And for everybody listening, think about this. And this is probably not an original thought to me, but I've never had it, so I'm excited. Do you think that Luke might have slipped some sort of recording device into either 3PO or R2 to have a sense of what was going on in there? Because, right, like if Leia was successful in freeing Han and she got out with him, you know, would Luke have needed to come? So it just kind of hit me today because a lot of times we see in these novels where like somebody has like, hey, watch this video, like in Bloodline, right? Like that one gangster has a video of Leia killing Jabba, you know, mm-hmm. Sorry, spoiler alert. If you haven't read that, man, I'm a jerk. Sorry. but right. Like there's always kind of in some of the books, there's like these just random like holo recorders. So I was wondering if maybe Luke put something in R2 or 3PO to have maybe a sense of when it's time for him to act. Again, this is just speculation. It's not in the film at all, but what do you think?
Maybe.
I mean, he could just be using the Force.
Or they had a plan, you know, if you don't hear from me by such and such a time.
True. If I don't text you by 9 o'clock tonight, I'm in trouble.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I feel like that's probably more what was going on than anything else. But yeah, no, it's an interesting thought.
Yeah, but it's also your point is also equally and less ridiculous. So, Jason, what do you think of the Blu-ray shot though of the expanded palace door?
I don't really care.
I love it.
I mean, it's a great, you know, it's a really big, you know, it's all big and intimidating now, so mm-hmm. that's kind of cool. But you know, I know people are like, oh, but then it's smaller on the inside. I'm like, it's the reverse TARDIS. Who cares?
It's not smaller. It's just you don't see it all the way up, so you don't know that, right? Like right. You don't see the top of the door, so that argument doesn't hold up. But I really
think they're thinking wide, you know.
But you can't even see the whole width of it either. At least I don't think. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway,
I don't know.
I just like it because, yeah, I like it because it just makes Jabba's palace seem all the more immense. It makes it more palace-y. So that's why I kind of like it.
More palace-y.
So they, you know,
I love this. I got to say, I love the sequence between the droids and the guard of the gate, basically. You get the feeling that the door guard is insulting them the entire time.
Yeah, he's kind of like, you know, in Shakespeare, he's like the drunk. The drunks are always the like guard duty guys.
At least
from the little Shakespeare that I know, there's always like the drunk who's meant to be the comedic part. I think that's in Hamlet, right? Because so many of those tragedies are so dark, but there's these random comedic moments with a drunk guy who guards the door. And that's, the guard droid is kind of like the drunk. So.
Right. Or maybe one of the guards on the top of the wall and Monty Python on the Holy Grail.
None shall pass.
I fart in your general direction.
I love that one. But they get in. 3PO, unfortunately, I just love it. The fact that 3PO is like, I better knock, I suppose. He gives like a tiny little tap. That doesn't seem to be anyone there. He does not want to be here.
Immediately. Yeah. It's not like he knocks and then waits. It's like, oh, there doesn't seem to be anyone there. Let's go back and tell Master Luke.
He does not want to be on this mission. Yeah.
No.
And I love that next shot is because you can kind of see why 3PO is apprehensive, and in a way, like symbolically, they're being swallowed by the darkness now, right? Like they're going into a very dangerous place.
Right. R2 obviously knows the plan, but 3PO is given only what he needs to complete his part of the mission. Because when R2 relays the message to Bib Fortuna through 3PO, that they bring a message and a gift.
Gift? What gift? It's kind of, that actually makes me think, Jason, that's like, again, kind of a parallel to what's happening with 3PO and R2 in A New Hope. What plans? What are you talking about? Right? He doesn't know that plan either.
Exactly.
Poor 3PO.
Yeah. R2 knows exactly how much 3PO needs to know and takes great delight in hiding the rest of the information, I'm sure.
Well, then they're going to bump into Bib Fortuna, who's one of my favorite characters in Jabba's Palace. And the odd reason, there's two reasons why I love Bib Fortuna. It has nothing to do with who he is in the movie. I don't care. Okay. I'm going to talk about him anyway. First is one of the very first, the first thing of like Star Wars toys I had when I was a kid was the Bendem toys. I don't know if you know what those are, Jason. They came out like shortly before the Power of the Force 2 line did in 95.
I'm vaguely familiar with them.
And for some reason, I just loved the Bib Fortuna Bendem because he had like a solid base so you could actually stand him up. All the rest of them would always fall over because they were like, like rubbery and they didn't stand very well. But Bib Fortuna stood up. So he was my favorite toy to play with when I first had Star Wars toys, which is really weird. I used to have him like chasing around Luke. I don't know. I didn't see the movie yet. So I really liked him for that. And then I always liked the vintage card of Bib Fortuna, the shot of him like on the card. I love those old vintage cards that they had for like, A New Hope, Empire and Jedi. Mm-hmm. And the picture of Bib Fortuna was always just so cool to me because it's just like his face and then it's all blackness, So Bib Fortuna, and he has fang teeth. He's kind of demonic looking.
A little bit. Yeah.
So I've always liked the look of him.
He's not your normal colorful Twi'lek. He's, he's a shadow lurker, that's for sure.
Yeah. And he's, in his first appearance, he kind of is an important person. He's the spokesperson for Jabba.
Yeah.
So he intercepts
Jabba
them.
Jabba the Hutt's majordomo.
Yeah. I'd like to be a majordomo. What a cool title. Hey, I'm Carl. I'm majordomo to the Pope. The Pope needs a majordomo.
Right. Yeah, that works.
I want to see if I can change my title at the new job. Instead of just being chaplain, I want to be the majordomo. Okay, sorry.
They're brought before Jabba, and we get the message finally.
But Jason, before we get the message, I'm surprised you got to love – this is something I love about R2. He's so darn persistent, right? Like, Bib Fortuna's trying to get the message from them, and 3PO is just like – sorry, but he's ever so stubborn about these sort of things.
Right. Yeah, no. Message is to be delivered to Jabba himself. I'm terribly sorry. He's ever so stubborn about these sort of things.
Yeah, I mean, R2's just not like, he's just not giving this up. Nope, sorry.
Nope.
No major domo is going to see this.
not unless you're there with Jabba. Jabba sees this. You know, yeah, no, R2 knows his mission and he's going to do it.
Yeah.
And that's always a great thing when R2 is persistent and stubborn against those who want to bend the rules, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. And what do you know? R2's carrying something yet again. Man, I'm picking up on a lot of these A New Hope parallels even in Jedi, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, R2's got a message. It's not Leia this time, it's Luke.
Right.
And it's certainly a different kind of message, but it's kind of similar plot structures.
Right.
So they're going to be, you know, they're finally brought into Jabba's den, and it's clearly a den of gangsters. You know, the first thing they walk by is this dark, you know, there's like this barking dog, which is the one creature effect. Like, it still looks cool, but it's not as intimidating, I think, as it's meant to be, right? Like, that would be like walking into, like, you know, Tony Soprano's like backroom dealers, where he's got like a bunch of like Rottweilers barking at you as you walk in, right? Like, there's some sort of intimidation to the dog, and that's kind of what that dog is. It's a watchdog,
right. But it comes off more like a sheepdog than a Rottweiler right now.
yeah, exactly. So you're right. They come in and they've got this message for Jabba,
and Luke basically very diplomatically delivers an ultimatum to Jabba. You know, I'm here for Han Solo, and as a gesture of good faith, I present you a gift, these two droids, which, you know, 3PO just freaks out about.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to be Jabba's anything.
No.
Not his property. No, thank you.
I'm good, thanks.
Yeah, the thing about Jabba, too, is one of the best creature designs in cinema, if you ask me. You know, he looks real. And that's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, in Phantom Menace and all the different attempts in the special editions, from the theatrical release to the VHS release to the DVDs to the Blu-rays, they never quite get... Like, he looks fine, but he doesn't look like he does in Return of the Jedi. Which is why that scene kind of doesn't work.
He looks... You know, other than this, his best look is Phantom Menace, in my opinion. And they just never... They've never quite
because at least that's like 30 years before, so
right.
Yeah, it's okay that he looks a little different.
But they've never gotten that scene in A New Hope quite right with him, unfortunately.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, he is just excess to the extreme. I mean, he's a king on a dais, surrounded by gangsters and thieves. He's not in any way intimidated. They do his bidding. And, you know, the dude can't even really move around well, but he's also, like, he's not afraid of anything. And that's the thing, like, Luke isn't threatening him here yet. Luke is trying to make a deal.
Right.
And Jabba's just, like, not having it because, you know, again, I like this. Bib Fortuna kind of leans in and says, it sounds to me, I don't know if he's speaking Hutties or not, but it sounds like Bib Fortuna says, Master, bargain without a fight, he's no Jedi. You know, like, when Bib Fortuna leans in, that's what it sounds like to me, is he's saying his bargain without a fight, he's no Jedi. You know, so, and Jabba doesn't, you know, Jabba believes that as well. Like, Jabba has been around. He knows the Jedi have been eradicated. He's not afraid of some young kid who claims to be a Jedi.
No, he's not at all.
And of course not, because he likes... Han Solo and Carbonite is the coolest decoration. I still want it in my room, like a life-size one. It is on my shower curtain, which is pretty cool. But, you know, I think, again, for Jabba, this is a warning. It's a warning, right, to anybody that comes by. Just like the Romans used to put crucifixes on the side of major highways.
Mm-hmm.
This was a you know, showing them, hey, if you mess with us, this is where you'll be. For Jabba, when you walk into his palace, if you defy me, you're going to be hanging on my wall.
Exactly. And of course, you know, Jabba graciously accepts Luke's gift, but refuses to bargain, refuses to negotiate. And he and all of his denizens find it utterly hilarious.
yeah, they got to laugh at kind of everything he says.
Right. Well, that's just
again,
true.
Think of a crime boss. Like, I always equate Jabba to Tony Soprano, just because I at least kind of know the Sopranos show a little bit. And that's the thing. I remember there is an episode where a bunch of Tony's goons are laughing at one of his jokes. and like his wife is like, do you realize that you're not funny? Like, they're just laughing because they're afraid of you. And like, it seems like that's probably the case with Jabba a lot of times. Like when he's, you know, spinning yards and stuff, it's like you have the applause sign comes up above his dais or something,
right?
You
know? Right.
So like, or the laugh sign, like, pay attention. You better do. You're his puppets.
Right. Right. His minions. And then of course we go down into the dungeons where,
which is cool as hell, by the way. He's got a dungeon. Yeah. That's so cool.
Well, he's a gangster. He has to have a dungeon.
That's
you
so
know?
Sick. Yeah, it's awesome.
And even the droids have a dungeon, which is a little excessive, but kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, they walk into this part of the dungeon and they're torturing droids. Droids are, to a certain degree, like, they're robots. They shouldn't be able to feel pain. Yet Jabba has figured out even how to cause pain to inanimate objects.
Right.
He is that cruel. His cruelty knows no bounds.
This gonk droid is just getting his feet burned for something, you know, who knows what it did. It's, you know, screaming. And then there's, of course, the last protocol droid or whatever it is, you know, there in the stretching rack.
It's so medieval, if you think about it. I mean, there's a dungeon and there's these torture devices, a stretching. I mean, that's Kylo, you know, Catholic Inquisition, you know, with the rack. Jeez. I guess that droid was a Protestant, poor guy.
Like that. And EV-99 is so perfectly suited for his, her, its job. I always equated EV-99 as a female personality for whatever reason, but I don't know.
Oh, interesting. I always thought of it as a male.
Anyway.
It's androgynous.
But she's... It's very, very pleased with the job it has.
You get
the idea.
Yeah. I mean, you can get the sense that EV-99 is itself a kind of a cruel droid.
Mm-hmm.
I love its mouth. It's just like that one single piece of metal that flaps up and down, right? Because, like, 3PO doesn't have a moving mouth. Most droids don't have a moving mouth. So I always liked that. I like that his, her, its mouth moves.
Right.
I always thought that was cool. It's just like a piece of metal, but it looks really cool to me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it. And it's also slightly off-putting because of what we've come to expect from droids too. So it's cool in the sense that, oh, that's kind of neat how they designed that. But it's also a little off-putting because it's completely different from everything we've seen so far. So
yeah,
which is exactly the idea,
right?
Well, of course,
God.
Of course, 3PO gets carted away.
Yeah.
And R2 is taken to work on the master's sail barge, where I think you'll fill in nicely.
Yeah. It's, you know, and again, he EV-99 calls R2 feisty. You'll soon learn some respect. You know, R2 is still kind of, he's just being himself. Whereas 3PO is always like, he'll get pushed around because he's just trying to survive. But here we have, like, our droids are captured, but maybe in a different way of looking at it is our droids have infiltrated.
Right.
In 3PO's mind, they've been captured. In R2's mind, they've infiltrated.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what I was about to say. Because R2's got the plan, and he knows this is what's supposed to happen. So,
yeah.
We then come back to Jabba's throne room, and we have our musical interlude, which I know there are so many vehement positions or just different opinions on what we've got in the special editions and, you know, from then on out with Jedi Rocks, which I will say again was the first piece I was introduced to in Jabba's palace. I like Lopty Neck, but I am also a big fan of Jedi Rocks. It's more of a, you know, 30s big band gangster movie, you know, where they're all sitting at the, you know, the musical review, whatever, and they're all sitting out making deals in the audience there with while this big show with all the glitz and the glamour is going on. So it never bothered me. But I know a lot of people are like, hey, it doesn't fit Jabba's palace or whatever. And I was like, yeah, it kind of does.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like it. I love the song. Like, I love it on the soundtrack. I enjoy it when it comes on the soundtrack when I'm listening to it. But I'm obviously, if you've listened to this show in the past, you know that I'm not a fan of this scene. the song to me doesn't fit in the film. I thought Lopty Neck fit a lot better. Also, the first song we hear when we come into Jabba's Palace, it's called Jabba's Broke Recital. It's on the soundtrack. It's a really cool piece. It fits a lot better with Lopty Neck. Jedi Rocks stands out to me. Jedi Rocks, I don't get that 30s feel. I get like this is like a pop rock song, which I love pop rock, but I don't think Jabba would. So I don't know. I don't particularly like it in the movie. And also the CGI does not hold up. Like Size Noodles looks terrible. I mean, it's fine because they
should work better than Jaya Yowza, the little guy who comes up and yells right into the camera.
Yeah, the guy who's on that cereal box. What is the name of that character? He looks just like a character from a cereal. I can't remember the name. He looks terrible too. I mean, granted, yeah, the Snice Noodles like puppet that they had looked really cheesy as well, but at least it fit in because everything else was a puppet, whereas these are very clearly CGI and the CGI is not great. It was. I remember loving that when it came out in 97 because it was new. Mm-hmm. I hadn't seen it. I loved it, but yeah, it's one of those scenes now that I don't particularly enjoy it. So, but it doesn't hurt the film either, I don't think.
Yeah, I like it. I'm a fan.
My favorite part of the scene is actually the end of it when, well, you know,
Ula.
Again, we find out what it means to defy Jabba. You know,
right.
he's trying to get her to do something. We don't know exactly what he's trying to coax her into doing. But she's refusing something. She's offering some level of resistance, and she gets dropped down into a pit.
Yeah.
You know,
and we're like, what is this pit? The door opens. You hear a growl. She looks scared. You hear her scream, and then we cut back to everyone laughing and enjoying whatever happened. And you're like, what happened?
Yeah. You know, and again, this was something when we got the special edition where we actually have her down there. We see the brief scene of the Rancor's, you know, cage opening. I loved it. I think I like it more than without now, just because it is, again, it's kind of like that Jaws mentality of only, don't show until you have to. Mm-hmm. It made it just that much more intimidating when Luke falls down there because we don't know what it is. We know something's down there, something that growls and something that makes her scream and go silent.
Right.
So again, like I think with, not that we see the Rancor because we don't, the door just starts to open and then it cuts back into the throne room. But I don't think we need that. Again, doesn't hurt it, doesn't help it, in my opinion. It's just there. So
yeah, it's just there.
But again,
and then Jabba eats a poor little frog alive.
Right.
It's like, oh, that's lovely.
Yep.
Thanks for that.
Yep. And then we get things get even worse.
Yeah.
A bounty hunter shows up with Chewbacca in chains. Even 3PO seems to be taken aback by this.
Yeah.
So again, if we're watching this through 3PO's eyes too, who again is completely ignorant of the plan,
right?
We're gonna identify with 3PO like, oh no, Chewbacca! Like, this is another one of our heroes is about to be captured.
Things were bad. Now they're getting worse.
Yeah.
You know, because if Chewie's captured, you know, who else is left? Well, Luke and Leia. But I mean, gosh, that's Our list of allies is running thin.
Yep. Yeah. And, so they... You have this neat scene where this bounty hunter, we don't know anything about, Boosh. I love Boosh, though. I love the look of Boosh. It's such a cool such a cool helmet and design. But, again, gets to a reasonable price with Jabba, puts the thermal detonator away. Jabba's impressed. Again, this is somebody who's threatening him with a thermal detonator. You know... Yeah, you probably can't just shoot the guy and kill him so easily, but a thermal detonator probably could blow him up. And what does he do? He laughs. He's everybody else is freaking out, right? Like we see Max Rebo covers his eyes, Salacious Crumb jumps under his pillow, Boba Fett, brings up his gun. Like everybody is alarmed or on edge here, except Jabba.
Right.
Jabba just laughs at it. Like he's not afraid. But he's impressed too. He's impressed that this bounty hunter would come in, threaten him like this. And, but he does like, they reach a deal.
They do. A deal is reached. A bargain is struck. Jabba's impressed, and he's got another impressive bounty hunter who he can call on now. And he's got the mighty Chewbacca in chains.
Yeah. Yeah. Jabba
things
likes
are
slavery.
Going his way.
Yeah, to say the least. But then we get this really neat shot. So the Gamorrean guards are leading Chewbacca off, and we see this guard come by and bump his head, and he pulls down the visor, and it's Lando. So Lando's undercover. Like, so there is, I think things have gotten so bad now.
Yeah.
Things just keep getting worse and worse and worse. There goes Chewie into the hands of a bounty hunter. And finally we're like, oh wait, that's Lando. And we know Lando and Chewie left to find Han. So something's going on. So right, like this is our first kind of glimmer of hope that maybe something else is going on here.
Yeah, maybe they've got, you know, maybe things aren't as bad as they seem.
Yep.
But
I want to mention quick just that again. This is I love George Lucas cinematography. You just get this silly shot of the outside of Jabba's palace, with again the setting suns.
You know this is something that George was like, oh, let's go ahead and do this. Yeah, that's not Richard Marquand's idea,
right? Yeah,
right.
Let's have a big creature. He'll eat something, and
we'll have him sitting outside. We can hear the music faintly from inside Jabba's palace.
You know what? Let's
get a big wide, closing shot for this sequence.
Maybe we'll have him fart too. No, George, no farting. Okay, fine. We'll just have him burp. He'll just do a burp.
Yeah.
but I do like it because it's very symbolic of what's going on the inside of that palace. Mm-hmm. The bigger beast keeps just consuming the smaller creatures.
Yeah.
It's kind of terrifying, and it's the sun setting. So it's... I think it's a really good Star Wars shot. It just fits perfectly.
It does. It does. And then, of course, we come to the, how everyone is after the party, which probably means this is about 6 or 7 a.m.
Yeah. Everybody's passed out, hungover.
Everyone is passed out from a long night of drinking and partying, and Bosher, however you want to say her name, is sneaking around.
Yeah, I love when she hits. I'm just saying she because I know it's Leia, but I love when she hits her head on the wind chimes.
Yeah,
because you're like, oh crap,
she goes and grabs it to make it stop chiming, and
yeah.
And then when the carbonite slab, because she goes over to Han in carbonite there, and when it comes down and then it falls back against the wall.
Makes that loud thud.
That makes that loud thud, and she backs against the wall like, good, everyone's still asleep.
Yep.
And she starts doing something we didn't expect. She unthaws Han Solo.
Which is a cool shot. Like, that is some really good CGI for 1983. I think holds up really well. And again, good acting by Harrison Ford, right? Like, just the movement of his hands now. It's like he's literally thawing out. It's really well put together.
Yeah. No, and it's good. And we learn that he's got hibernation sickness. He can't see yet. And we finally get the reveal of who Boosh is. Someone who loves you.
Yeah. And I think this is so important, though, for Leia. Who is Leia? What is her identity? Someone who loves. That is a very different Leia than A New Hope.
Yeah.
Or even, the first half of Empire. She's kind of just like a somewhat cold character who just wants to get the job done. It's kind of funny. Han's thawed out. This is a man who goes to the grave for her in a sense, and that's what thaws her out. So, she has a new identity now. She's someone who loves. And I really like that line. It's really telling of that character growth of Leia. She doesn't say it's me or like I've come back, Han. Like, she says someone who loves you. So who are you? That's who I am. Again, it's somewhat similar to Luke's, claim of identity at the end of the film. I'm a Jedi. Leia is someone who loves. I just think it's it's a really powerful scene that I've never really, that really clicked with me like that until I was watching it today, actually. It's just like, wow, like, this is an identity statement. Leia's a new person. She's grown. Yeah. All of our characters have grown.
They've all grown. And while Luke's is the primary, you know, character arc that we get in here, and obviously the most obvious character arc, each of our three main heroes has a character arc that sort of comes to some culmination here. Obviously, we'll get more into Luke's much later when we come back to do Act 3. But, you know, Leia has, you know, as you were saying, thawed out a bit. And she's, you know, gotten to the point where, yes, she is a leader in the Rebel Alliance. The missions do matter, but now also so do the people in her life, family and friends, that sort of thing. She's gotten to the point where she's struck a much better balance than what she was early on in the saga. And then Han, of course, has learned to embrace the idea of family and not just be a loner, not be solo, so to speak.
Yeah. He's Han family.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Han familio. You know, they're going to get caught here. I love that shot where the curtain comes, right? Like the curtain is pulled back and we see a Reese. It's, you know, that's the name of the species. It's got its hand over 3PO's mouth, which I think is really cool.
No, that's his name.
That's his name.
Reese. Yeah. He's a Gran.
Oh, wow. I feel stupid. All right, then. But yeah, you know, so they're keeping 3PO quiet, but finally, yes. And I like that before the curtain comes, you hear Jabba's laugh, and Han is immediately on edge. Like, what's that? I know that laugh, you know? Right. And we see Han try to get himself out of this. He's trying to barter. He's trying to sweet talk a deal, you know, like, I'll give you extra money. Like, I can give you a lot of money. Just let us go. But Jabba's past that point of forgiveness. There is no mercy in Jabba the Hutt. You know, now it's at the point where, in Jabba's mind, he'll look weak if he in any way makes a deal with Han. He's got to set an example. And he's got no qualms doing it.
No.
And just to make things even worse, he personally takes control of Leia.
Yeah. Leia is... Lando steps in as if he's going to try and just take her down to a cell or something. And Jabba's like, no, we're going to do something much worse to the Princess of Alderaan, you know.
Good point. I never understood why Lando stepped up there. But yeah, that's a good point. He was probably trying to make this moment go quick.
Right. Get her out of there. Get her into a cell. So before Jabba can do something like what he does.
Yeah. I remember in the Return of the Jedi novel, and this is something that has still stood out to me, even though I haven't read that novel in probably 15 years. This scene in the novel, they don't go into a tremendous amount of detail, but we get a little bit of it from Leia's perspective, and she says that it's worse than anything she's experienced in her life, even being tortured by Darth Vader. So, like, she is, like, molested by Jabba, which is kind of weird because he's a Hutt and huge, like, and she's a little human, but, like, again, it doesn't go into, like, gross detail or anything, but this poor woman, I mean, she's been tortured. She's seen her planet blown up, and now she's, like, molested by this disgusting Hutt.
We sort of get an idea of what's going on with when he gives her that, would you call it a kiss, right before it cuts away?
Yeah, I don't know. He just he's a predator. That's all he is. Like, he's licking his chomps, right? He's licking his lips, just getting himself right. He's gross. Yeah. Ugh. He's extremely hedonistic.
Yeah, so. And of course, you know, 3PO, I can't bear to watch, and we're all just like, yeah, me too.
Yeah, neither can we, 3PO. And Han gets, you know, at least Han doesn't have to see it, although he probably knows something as awful is going on. He's thrown into a cell, blind and in the dark, and then he hears a little rumble, and it's his best friend.
Right.
And I love this moment, because Chewie catches Han up on everything that he's missed. You know, by the way, Luke's a Jedi. What? Are you kidding me? And
I'm out of it for a little while. And everyone gets delusions of grandeur.
And then is the most tender moment. He pets Han. I love that. He's just like stroking his hair like he's petting his puppy.
Right.
So it's just, it's such a tender moment between the two of them. I love that moment.
Yeah. It's a good moment, and it is still one of my favorite Han and Chewie moments.
It's so good.
We should do an episode about favorite Han and Chewie moments.
I was just making a note of that. Like, that's going to, I think, have to be our next episode. Top five Han and Chewie moments.
There you go. There you go.
I'm making a note of it right now.
Sounds good. But if, then, of course, we cut to either later on or the next day, probably the next day, and Luke arrives. And I like the fact that it just seems like Luke has opened the door. You know, Nobody's opened the door for him. Luke's opened it.
Right.
And of course, it rises up, and the silhouette is very obviously Darth Vader-esque as he walks into the palace. And I know, you know, his dark clothing and the silhouette and everything is supposed to start getting us on edge about if Luke is going to fall to the dark side in this, you know, in this movie. And while he does get tempted towards that, towards the end of the movie, in this situation, that, especially when I was a kid, that never crossed my mind. I was just like, oh, good, Luke's here. You know, now things are going to start going better. You know.
Yeah. That, I'm with you. I never thought Luke was going to turn in this movie at any point, to be honest. He was just always, he's the blue-blooded hero.
Right.
I love the shot of him just strolling in. Because, again, it's super symbolic, but here comes the light into the darkness, right? Like, he just opens the door and in pours the light. It's probably early morning again. They're all, like, pretty much passed out from a night of partying and revelry. Mm-hmm. And here comes Luke. He is the source of light into this dark place. And that is a good point that he probably does just open it on his own, because when 3PO and R2 enter, you see that like spider droid kind of walk by behind them, right? Like as if that was potentially what opened the door. When Luke comes in, there's nothing there. So there's a really good chance that he just uses the Force to open the door himself.
Yeah.
And there are two Gamorrean guard to attempt to stop him. And Luke does something, again, very Vader-esque. He chokes them. Lifts two fingers and chokes them. Now, again, I know we've talked about this on here before, Jason, but I've always taken it as he just kind of incapacitates them. He knocks them out. He does not kill them.
Yeah. So it's like a sleeper hold.
Yeah.
More than anything.
He like Walker Texas Ranger'd them.
Exactly.
So, like Walker roundhouse kicks people into submission.
Right. Exactly.
So he just Walker Texas Rangers these Gamorrean guards with two fingers.
He's on his way.
Yeah. And again, I think what that was meant to do in 1983 in the outfit he's wearing, the silhouette he's casting, and the powers he's using, the Force powers he's using. Hello, Vader, right? Like it's meant to give you that impression. But again, and I kind of like that moment too, because I like that Luke uses it's what we would normally consider a dark side power. But like, is it okay for a good guy to use a dark side power in a proper way, right? Like he doesn't go all out with it. He doesn't crush their throats and kill them. He just knocks them out, you know?
Right.
So I don't know, I like it.
And yeah, no, it's a good one.
And he's going to go through, except for probably what we don't see what he sees at the gate, but he's going through kind of a similar process to R2 and 3PO, but with a much different outcome, right?
Oh, yes.
There's Gamorreans, guards. R2 bumps into one and backs up kind of like shocked and afraid.
Right.
Luke incapacitates them. Bib Fortuna shows up and they kind of have to convince him to, you know, take them to Jabba.
Right.
Luke shows up and Jabba has clearly made it clear. If this guy shows up, he's not welcome. He's not supposed to be here. And Bib Fortuna, you know, he runs up. He's got his finger up like, no, you're not supposed to be here. And we see, again, a connection to A New Hope. It's the first power Luke sees from the Force is Force manipulation. And now Luke is doing it flawlessly.
Yeah. Jedi mind trick.
Yeah.
He convinces Bib Fortuna to take him to Jabba.
And, you know, I think for me, when I used to watch that scene, I was just kind of like, oh, yeah, of course he's doing this to Bib Fortuna. He's dim-witted and stupid. But if you think about it, he's Jabba's major domo, and based on Phantom Menace, he's been the major domo for 35 years.
Mm.
The dude isn't stupid. Like, he knows what he's doing. He's survived Jabba's palace for 30-odd years.
Which is remarkable in and of itself.
Right, so I think the fact that Luke is doing it so easily says more about Luke and less about Bib Fortuna being weak-minded.
Right. Right. Even though Jabba calls him a weak-minded fool, you know. But still.
Yeah. And Luke just keeps rolling with that power, though, because, again, he almost does it to Jabba.
Yeah.
I love that. Like, you will bring Captain Solo and his friends to me. Jabba pauses. There is that pause there. It's like one of the most powerful pauses in Star Wars.
And right. Then,
ho, 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 your Jedi tricks won't work on me, boy. But they almost did. Like,
right.
Jabba's a Hutt. Like, you know, Qui-Gon couldn't do it to Watto. Jabba's probably even more, you know, strong-minded against these than a Tordalian. But here's Luke almost doing it.
Right.
It's awesome.
Right. And then, you know, Luke warns Jabba to not underestimate his power, and Jabba's like, I don't really care. And this is when Luke tries to make a move, and Jabba drops him and a Gamorrean guard into the pit.
Yeah.
They're like...
Before that, though.
Okay.
Again, love the scene. Luke is just like... Now he's threatening. You know, you don't want to underestimate me and my powers. Like, Luke mm-hmm. is confident. You know, we've talked about this before, so I won't repeat myself. But I like it because, again, it shows us how confident Luke has become. But what I did notice is Luke looks over to Lando, and Lando kind of grips his axe and steps forward. I'm wondering, you know, was Luke's plan to force pull a blaster and just put one between Jabba's eyes? I don't know, right? Like, was this going to be an assassination attempt? I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know.
Like, why is Lando about to act?
It is a question. You know, is he going to actually put one between his eyes, or is he just going to threaten Jabba with the blaster and try and convince him to see reason with the blaster? But the Gamorrean guard grabs a hold of his hand before he can do that. I don't know. You know, it's... For as dim-witted and, you know, slow as the Gamorreans generally are, that one reacted rather quickly.
Yeah.
He got in Luke's way. I don't know. It does make you wonder, though, if Luke was going to just assassinate Jabba. It would lend an interesting perspective on Luke's mental state going in, because, you know, assassination is not exactly the Jedi way, even though they tried to do that in the Clone Wars, but that's neither here nor there. That if he was going to just try and assassinate Jabba, maybe the idea that Luke's, you know, treading towards the dark side isn't so far-fetched, you know? The question about him treading towards the dark side, at least. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Good point. That's a good point.
Yeah.
That he would be willing to kill Jabba, you know, to free them.
Right.
Yeah, good point. So finally, he gets dropped into the pit, has his fight with the Rancor, which I know you love because it's kind of like a Greek mythological moment.
Oh, it is. It is. You know, the rest of what happens on Tatooine is straight out of the Odyssey. In the monsters that we face, you know, the Rancor is very much the Cyclops from the Odyssey, but of course, rather than stabbing the Cyclops in the eye in order to get out, Luke drops the door on the Rancor's head. The Rancor, by the way, is probably my favorite creature in all of Star Wars. I love the Rancor. It's always been one of my favorites. I don't know what that says about me, but anyways.
Yeah.
There's not too much to tell about the scene other than, obviously, Luke's skill level has increased. His combat skill levels have definitely increased since last we saw him. If he's able to unarmed fend off this Rancor several times before finally getting, you know, killing it, But yeah, there's not much to say about it.
Yeah, well, again, it's you don't have to say again. It's an action scene that says a lot without, you know, verbally saying anything. Luke is powerful. Mm-hmm. He can take. You know, it's very clear that this Rancor has probably been Jabba's pet for a while. It's devoured lots of his enemies, but
right.
It can't devour Luke. Luke will not be devoured. You know, he's too strong for that. He's too strong and connected to the Force. So that's what I like about it. And I love the Rancor, just the way it looks. It looks so cool.
Yeah.
And it's probably one of the most depressing moments in Star Wars when Malakili comes running out and starts crying. Oh, man, you feel so bad for him.
Oh, I know. It's so sad.
I know, man. I'm trying to put on weight for Celebration next year so that I can be Malakili.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
Yeah. I'd love to be him. But so finally, our family, in a sense, is reunited, but they're all in chains.
Yeah. You
know? But Jabba doesn't realize if you bring them together, oh, snap, look out. Like,
exactly.
You're just giving them the opportunity to act now. You know, and he gives them their death sentence, which Han is not thrilled about. Oh, by the way, really cool moment there with Chewie. When one of the Gamorrean guards is like walking by, he snaps at it. That's so cool. Did you ever notice that?
No, I did not.
Yeah, it's really cool if you watch it. Like, right after they're brought in and stood before Jabba, the Gamorrean that kind of, like, muscles Chewie in is, mm-hmm. like, taking a step away, and Chewie just snaps at him. Like, like takes a bite at him. It's really cool.
I'm playing the video now, so as we're talking, obviously, this is what I normally do, so I'll get there here in a second.
But it's a great little moment, and, you know... Poor 3PO is forced to read them their death sentence.
Right.
Although we could imagine, you know, both Luke and Han probably, well, definitely Han understands Huttese. Luke probably does too, growing up on Tatooine.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. 3PO is translating for us, the audience.
Right.
Maybe and Leia.
Also, it's probably one of those things where Jabba takes great pride in having, you know, their own droid tell them their fate.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So they're going to be led out, and I love Luke over his shoulder. You know, you should have bargained, Jabba. It's the last mistake you'll ever make. Like, he's so, again, like, borderline cocky, but just so darn confident. That's right. What I like about it. But I really like that comment, you know, and just the way he says it. And Jabba laughs at it again. But we're like, yeah, Luke's probably going to follow through. He's not just going to talk smack and not back it up.
Right. Yeah, no, Luke is supremely confident in what's going on here. And we're glad he is because, you know, everything looks bad. So, but of course, they are taken to the Great Pit of Carkoon to be thrown to the all-powerful Sarlacc. To be digested for over 1,000 years. And, of course, this is another one of those very Greek things, from, again, the Odyssey, which is one of my favorite great Greek stories. Odysseus and his men are trying to go through these narrow straits where there's a whirlpool called Charybdis, I believe is how you pronounce it, which just, you know, eats ships is the idea. And then, of course, up above in the cliffs above this whirlpool is the Scylla, which is a, you know, six-headed monster that comes down and eats people. And so you've got the Sarlacc, which just swallows everybody, and then you've got all the Jabba's minions shooting and fighting down here during this battle. And so it's a very, you know, Greek-esque moment. And highly reminiscent of the Odyssey, which is, you know, part of why I like this section of the movie so much. So,
Well, I like this moment, you know, this part of the movie mainly because now we really see Luke unchained, unfettered, like completely just kicking butt,
unleashed. You know,
it's Luke unleashed, yeah. And we see him back up all that cocky confidence he kind of has when he's threatening Jabba.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're about to be thrown in, and Luke looks, you know, R2 finally springing into action. Like, he knows what's going on. Again, we, in our last two episodes ago, when we did our kind of favorite R2 moments, this is one of my favorite R2 moments. You know, he's serving the drinks and just reassures 3PO, don't worry, everything's going to be fine. Yep. You know, don't fret. I got this.
I wish I had your confidence.
Yeah. Yeah. So R2's going to go up top, which, again, it's important to note, Boba Fett kind of notices that. Boba Fett kind of keeps an eye on R2.
Yeah.
You know, Luke springs into action. He's got a new lightsaber. And, man, is he just tears it up. Again, I don't have a ton to say other than that. Like, this is a really awesome action scene. The only thing that's, you know, again, a big difference between Luke's fighting style here and then, you know, you watch like Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon, you know, aboard the Federation ship in Phantom Menace. Very different lightsaber styles.
Yes. You
know, Luke is a hacker. They fight with an elegance, which again makes sense. Luke is being trained at a different time.
Yeah. He hasn't had any real formal lightsaber training. So this is all learned, in the moment. For Luke, and so it's not pretty, it's not elegant, it's what works.
Yeah. So. You know, it's, you know, I think we'll see, like, when I'm really hoping we see Luke fight with a lightsaber. I'm pretty sure we will in episode 8. Mm. I don't think it's going to be a prequel-y style lightsaber fighting. It's going to be something, I'm sure it's going to look probably kind of polished compared to what we saw in Return of the Jedi, but it's not going to be a Duel of the Fates type lightsaber fight. It's going to be like, you know, more like what we saw in Force Awakens, but with more centeredness, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I mean, the Jedi lightsaber style to me in like the prequel era, it's a martial art form, right? It's an art form.
Yeah.
It's a form of expression. But what we get with Luke and potentially what we're going to get in the sequel trilogy is, it's more of it's a fighting technique as opposed to a martial art, right? Like, it'd be like the difference between like jujitsu and
it's the difference between samurai and medieval knights.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, samurai, very elegant, very, you know, it is a martial art form for them. And then, you know, with the medieval knights is, you know, it's what works, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like Taekwondo is like it's a fighting form, but it's very like kind of acted out. It's a martial art. It's an art. But if you do jujitsu is all about how can I hurt somebody as quickly as possible. You
know? Right.
It's not about like looking good. It's about taking them down quick and painfully.
Right.
So, but yeah. So you know, we do get a very different fighting style from Luke if you've seen the prequels before this.
Yes.
But it's no less effective. And again, it's important to point out Luke isn't just fighting like idiots. This is Jabba's gang. Like, these guys have probably been in some scrapes. Like, they know how to fight. It's just they don't know how to fight a Jedi at all.
Exactly. Exactly. There haven't been Jedi for over 20, actually longer than that. I guess, you know, almost 30 years, I guess. There haven't really been any Jedi around. So they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And there's never really been a ton of Jedi on Tatooine to begin with.
Exactly.
So, this is something they don't know how to fight. And it shows up because they get their butts kicked.
Yeah.
I like what's... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I was going to change the topic just slightly, but go ahead and finish it up.
Oh, no. Well, I was just going to mention, you know, how important it is that Leia uses her slave chains to kill Jabba.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go. I was going to say, while all this is going on, while Luke is taking down all the guards and Han and Chewie are trying to rescue Lando from the Sarlacc, Leia has done what I'm sure many, many people have tried and failed at doing before, and that is kill Jabba the Hutt.
Yep.
You know, and she uses her chain and strangles the dang thing. Strangles the stupid slug, which no easy feat because, you know, where exactly is his neck?
He's got like 30 of them.
30 chins.
Yeah.
But she does. She uses her chains to strangle him, which is, you know, not only an impressive physical feat, but also, she uses the that which was supposed to bind her to free herself.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, what a great moment. And she's like this little person who, little person in the sense that like she's not a big, jacked, strong person. She's, but she like, it's almost like if it's the last thing I do, I will kill him.
Right.
I will, you know, I will wipe his stain out forever, you know. And she does. And I love how, what I love is the pickup scenes here. And what I mean by that is like the R2 stuff. So R2 yes. rolls up, you know, she still is chained up. R2 frees her. And then you have that great little moment with, and I can't believe I forgot this moment because I probably would have put this on our favorite R2 moments episode, but I love because R2 rolls up on 3PO and like, R2, help, please. Like he's like sincerely pleading and R2 immediately comes to the rescue of his friend.
Oh yes. Yeah. From you know, Salacious Crumb pulling 3PO's eye out and R2 comes over and does something very satisfying and zaps the little bugger, sending him up into the rafters.
Right. Yeah. And kind of similar to the, you know, the moment you really like in Attack of the Clones where he, you know, rolls through a battle just to like put 3PO back together. Now he's rolling through the chaos of this battle inside the, you know, the sail barge to find his friend and free him.
Right. Right. And then of course, as Luke and Leia are dispatching the rest of the guards and getting ready to blow up the sail barge, R2 gets 3PO out of there by knocking him off the sail barge.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get the nice little pickup shots of, you know, Han and Lando have been pulled back onto the skiff. Luke and Leia swing on over to safety, and then they go pick up the droids with the magnets, which, of course, it's just so typical that 3PO has fallen head first into the sand dune. I always thought it was funny that of all the things sticking out of the sand, it was his feet. and then R2's right side up. so.
Yep. Again, R2 always knows what's going on. 3PO's lost in the sand.
Yeah. And it's such a great little heroic moment with everything going on, you know, as they zoom away across the sands and then we cut to them leaving the planet and the music and everything. It makes it a very nice little heroic moment to say, ah, we did it. You know, now we can breathe.
Yeah, it's great. And that's in the music again, there is great. John Williams gives us like this heroic music, like our heroes have won yet again.
Yeah.
And you know, to me, Act One kind of ends with them. You know, we finally get a shot in, you know, of the Millennium Falcon. Yay! You know, the Falcon and the X-wing, they split. Leia and company. You know, Leia, Han, Lando, Chewie, the droids. They're heading back to the Alliance. They're heading back to the fight. You know, the big fight. Luke is heading off to Yoda. And to complete what he thinks is his training. And again, I think that does make some sense for some of the stuff that's going on in the new expanded universe. Like Luke isn't around much. I guess that kind of does make sense. Like Luke doesn't immediately go back to the Alliance. You know, even though there's a bigger picture always going on, Luke is being attentive to the subtleties of the Force that are acting beneath the surface.
Right. Right.
So I think it works that Luke, you know, he is going a different way right now.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, now that his friends are safe, he is very, very confident in leaving them for a bit to go back and you know, finish his training with Yoda.
Yeah.
And of course, R2's there with them, and the two of them head off to, you know, visit an old friend.
Yep. And I think that's where we'll end this episode.
Yes. Act one of Return of the Jedi. Complete.
Game, set, match.
We do know there's a bigger, you know, danger out there in the Empire. We've only had one glimpse of them so far, and that was at the beginning of the movie. So we got to get back to them for Act Two, reestablish their threat in this movie. But we'll save that for when we come back around.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because they just overcame a pretty big, scary threat, but there's something far bigger looming on the horizon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Wow. So I guess next month we'll start our Act Twos, Carl.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I guess we'll go back to A New Hope.
Or do we start with Phantom Menace? I forget.
I don't remember. We'll have to look. But I'm pretty sure we did A New Hope, Phantom Menace, then Force Awakens.
Okay.
But we can always just go back and now start and then do Phantom Menace, A New Hope, Force Awakens.
I think that's what we did.
Okay. Whatever.
We'll look back and we'll figure it out. Don't worry, folks.
Yeah. I'm excited that we came up with a topic for our next show though already.
Yeah, yeah. So top five Han and Chewie moments.
I can't wait. I love the two of them. That'll be great. Yeah. So if you want to participate in our matchup, we forgot to get it up before this episode, but it will definitely go over it with our next episode. Which the matchup was Guri from Shadows of the Empire versus Bones from Star Wars Aftermath. Feel free to use Wikipedia if you want to participate and you don't know who those characters are.
Yes. We highly encourage that because that's what I will be doing. So.
All right.
So, and then if they want to weigh in on that matchup, Carl, or give us their thoughts on anything else, where can they do that?
They can do it over on Facebook. Facebook.com/WampasLairPodcast. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/WampasLair, or shoot us an email at WampasLairPodcast@gmail.com.
Anything else?
No, sir.
All right. Well, that will wrap up this episode of the Wampas Lair Podcast. This has been episode number 196, Return of the Jedi, Act 1. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here at the Wampas Lair.